I'm Brian McCreath with Kirill Gerstein, and we're at Symphony Hall, where Kirill is here to play a brand new concerto by Thomas Addis, and it's an event I've been looking forward to for a long time, known this concerto is coming along, and now I finally got to hear it in your rehearsal this morning. Kirill, thanks for taking a few minutes to talk with me today.
It's great to speak to you, always.
So this concerto, as I understand the sort of story of it developing, began when you were here in 2012 doing In 7 Days, and you just kind of off the cuff mentioned to Tom, how about writing a piece for me? Then you saw it for the first time at Tanglewood last summer, I think. And so what was your first impression when you actually sat down and saw what he had put together?
Well, you know, he very casually said, as we were over at his house while we were both playing at Tanglewood, and he said, oh, there on the piano is your concerto. And I said, oh, how interesting. And then he sat down and kind of illustrated bits and pieces of it. And I found that even just the first theme is instantly catching one's ear, and I find it instantly memorable. And the harmonic language is very attractive. It's very tonal, but it moves in sort of very Tom ways. And it's truly, I think, a very important and exciting musical event. And here we are sitting in the dressing room of the Boston Symphony, where there's the front two pages of Symphony of Psalms of Stravinsky hanging on the wall. And so I think this is really a continuation of the great BSO tradition of commissioning truly important works, and it's a thrill to be a part of this one.
Symphony of Psalms being one of those works that the BSO commissioned. I'm curious, because you commissioned a lot of music from other composers. You've premiered other music that you didn't commission. You've done a lot of new music. What difference did it make, do you feel, in this particular piece, that Tom isn't sort of just familiar with the piano? He's a world-class pianist himself. Was there something about the writing that you could sort of tell, yeah, this is put together by a pianist?
Well, absolutely. With Tom, it's clear that when you see how the writing is laid out on the keyboard, so to say, that this is really somebody who feels the keyboard very idiomatically. And also, I find with Tom's musical language, but also with his keyboard language, the knowledge of whatever has come before him is very apparent, and he plays with it. So, you know, so there is his take on some of Ravel's texturing and his take on some of Liszt's devices. But then it's always transformed by Tom's original point of view. So it's piano writing that's very rooted in tradition, but also very original and very individual to Tom and to Tom's hands. And I find the same with the musical language and the shape of the concerto, that it's acknowledging the great traditional models, but it's not enslaved by them.
That's a great way to put it. One of the things that surprises me about the concerto, just knowing a lot of other pieces that Tom has written, is that it doesn't, at least on the surface, involve any kind of extra musical influences, any inspirations from some other source. It's, as we say in the business, absolute music. Was it surprising to you that he didn't pull in some extra reference to something else?
No, I mean, I think he set out to, as he said in 2012, looking back at that conversation, when he said, well, I think I'd like to write a proper piano concerto. And I think so, this is in that sense of a truly proper, or much more than proper, piano concerto. On the other hand, in our work together, in our exchanges about this piece in preparation for this week, he's made a tremendous number of allusions. They're not according to a certain storyline or a plot. But, you know, there are ping pong balls and snakes and an octopus. And, you know, there are a lot of creatures and objects in this story. And I find that one of the things that's very striking about Tom's creative thinking is his ability to make very apt allusions and parallels to musical phenomena, but also to, you know, the physical world and to concepts. So that's always very interesting. You know, what will he compare something with?
Yeah, no, that's one of the things about his presence at the BSO that's been so stimulating. His sheer programming, aside from his music itself, his programming of different concert programs is just amazing, because he draws threads through things that you didn't expect would be related to each other. And I imagine that happens with some of those things that you're describing in the concerto as well. You worked with him kind of, as I understand it, from a distance, as he refined the concerto after that you first saw it at Tanglewood last summer. And it makes me wonder how much of you find in this concerto. Was Tom sort of explicitly drawing on aspects of your musical personality to inform how he was putting this concerto together?
Who knows? I think the best person to ask is most likely Tom.
Yeah.
But I do know, for example, when he came to hear me play the Transcendental Etudes of Liszt in New York, and afterwards said, "Ooh, this gives me all sorts of ideas what to occupy you with." And so, who knows? Maybe there is some of his knowledge of my playing in it. And of course, I'm sure, you know, he wrote what he had to write, because that's what the piece demanded in some way as it begins to unfold. But then there's a lot of very stimulating give and take in the so-called interpretation also, where he will point out some specific places that are very important to him a certain way, and that's pretty much always convincing for me. And on the other hand, even today, this morning, I said, I'm taking a bit of time here. Do you think it should be moving forward slightly more? He said, "No, I like it the way I'm hearing it." He said, "It's totally up to you." So there is that, I think, give and take and exchange between a composer and a so-called interpreter.
Yeah, and was there anything about this concerto, as you've now settled in with it and as you are now rehearsing it to perform, anything that you have found to be consistently, every time you're going through it, just really, really challenging, like one of those things that no matter how many times you look at it, you're going to always kind of approach it and kind of get yourself ready for it?
Well, you know, yeah, from the beginning to the end. it's a challenging piece, but this always fascinates me with great composers writing, so virtuosic music, that it's hard, and yet there is a moment where you can feel comfortable within these challenges. And I think that's something about also idiomatic writing for the instrument, that it's challenging. And at first, a lot of passages in Rachmaninoff and a lot of passages in the new Adas concerto, you think, wow, how is this going to work? Or is this going to work in my hands? You know, abstractly, sure. And then there is a moment where it kind of seeps into the hands and the mind. And then, oh, you know, this is, I understand what it's getting at. So there's definitely a lot of that. And on top of that, there are the metric games that he always plays with, how these sort of asymmetrical timings that I think some people recognize as jazzy in this concerto, especially in the third movement, how he layers that on top of the, you know, the difficulty of what are the notes and where are they. And so there are a lot of challenges, but I'll tell you one place in the third movement towards the end took the longest for me to sort of fall in love with and to understand what he is getting at. And when we met in London, I said, so I played the concerto for him, and I said, "Can you play these 20 measures, so I get a bit of an idea. And he sat down and he was like, oh, actually, I can't. So that was a slight, you know, relief and encouragement that, you know, it's giving him some trouble too. So, but now I think we've found a way to do it together.
That's terrific. Well, speaking of challenging concertos, you've just released this recording with the BSO of the Busoni Piano Concerto, which is not done by everybody. This is not a piece that people tend to just take up along with the Rachmaninoffs and the Mozarts and the Beethovens. I mean, so from that point of view, is it partly, do you think, because the Busoni is so challenging, or is there more going on with that piece that kind of makes it a more daunting prospect for pianists?
Well, I think certainly it is one of the most challenging, if not the most challenging concerto in terms of just being able to play it and its sort of large-scale proportions. You are playing essentially for about 70 minutes. It's really a Mahler symphony with the most challenging, extensive piano commentary. And so I think that's a part of it, and it takes, therefore, truly a symphonic conductor. It's not a piece that you can drive from the piano, as you sort of can with a Rachmaninoff concerto, for example, or a Prokofiev concerto. So you need a great symphonic conductor that can pace a composition that is so large scale. You need a great choir for the last movement, the men choir, and also you need a great orchestra, because it really is a symphony with piano commentary. The piano commentator is obviously Busoni himself, or we assume his role in his footsteps, and therefore it was such a thrill that we could release the recording, and it's a live recording from the concerts that we did together here in 2017. And Sakari Oramo is a great symphonic conductor, and of course no need to tell you about the wonderful BSO and the Tanglewood Choir. And as some listeners might know, there is also Busoni's connection to Boston and the Boston Symphony, because in the 1890s he taught across the road, so to say, at the New England Conservatory. And in fact, the Boston Symphony was sort of the orchestra that helped him launch his United States career, which then was sort of legendary repute, his concert tours and appearances. But he was at first most closely associated with the Boston Symphony, and in fact Karl Muck, who, as you know, was one of the BSO music directors, was the conductor that conducted the Busoni Piano Concerto in 1904 at the premiere with Berlin Philharmonic, and Busoni was also very close to Arthur Nikisch, and so there is that Busoni Boston Symphony connection, and yet the orchestra had never played the Busoni Piano Concerto in its history until our concerts. So that was particularly exciting for me, and I'm very glad that this recording is now out and preserves also the live concert atmosphere, because, you know, one thing of doing it in the studio, which maybe is a little bit more safe and calm, but the excitement and adrenaline that we all had in these performances, I think that translates well into this album as well.
It really does. It really does. Yes. I mean, I remember the concerts when we broadcast them, but yes, when you listen to the recording, you feel like you're right there. It's terrific. One thing that struck me about the way that this recording is presented is that there's very extensive notes, and a lot of those notes really concern Busoni's whole world, which is kind of very fascinating, you know, compared, I mean, he's such a character, such an amazing figure in terms of how he worked through the world. So I guess what the question it brought to mind is, when you prepared the Busoni concerto, how much did you feel like you needed to know Busoni, the person? There's so much philosophy built into this piece. How much did you have to sink into that whole world in order just to understand what you were playing?
Well, it was kind of the other way around, because the sinking started when I was about 10 years old, when I was given a book about Busoni and his life and his music. In Russia, there was actually a good book on Busoni.
And so this is back when you were living in Russia before you came to the States.
So I learned that and somehow was immediately struck by this magnetic personality. And that fascination has continued ever since. And in fact, when I came to Boston, this is when I got to hear a recording of the piano concerto for the first time, and I remember borrowing the score from the library. So those were sort of first encounters, and I've played a lot of Busoni's music, a lot of later pieces by Busoni for solo piano and the violin sonata and the Fantasia Contrapuntistica for two pianos, and as we were preparing the release of this album, I suggested and insisted that we really do something extensive to present Busoni, because I think, for various reasons, but partially also because of the breadth of his activities, he is still in some way a confusing and sometimes unknown quantity to the general listening public. I mean, everybody knows the Busoni arrangements of Bach, but those are coming from his mid-20s, and he did many, many more and different things afterwards. And so if you think that, just to rattle off a few things, that he was a compositional mentor to Sibelius, who acknowledged that, to Edgar Varese, to Kurt Weill, and he was one of the most significant piano teachers of all time. He was certainly one of the, let's say, top two, three people that ever played the keyboards, together with probably Franz Liszt and Anton Rubinstein. And he was, as you said, a philosopher of music. His thoughts really shaped the course of music in the 20th century, and he manages to predict electronic music, he manages to predict microtonal tunings. So authors, just if you think, in the 3 years that he was in exile in Zurich in Switzerland during the First World War, he writes about 5,000 letters. And so he's a prolific writer, and he's communicating with Rilke, with Kandinsky, with Schoenberg. And so he's really a kind of the last Renaissance man. And this is not very well known about him. So therefore, the new recording in its physical form, if you acquire it, then it has an 88-page booklet that has one article that I thought should really talk about the scope of Busoni's activities as an artist, and then an article that concentrates particularly on the piano concerto. And also there are a number of illustrations from the Busoni archive, which is housed in Berlin, and some of which have never been published. So this is a chance to see some sketches that Busoni drew and some rare photographs of his.
A good argument not to rely on streaming alone. Let's get the CD. Yes,
because if you stream, you get to hear the music. We stand behind the music, but the nice booklet that accompanies it is with a physical medium.
No, the articles really are incredibly deep and engaging. I loved reading them. They're really, really, really terrific. Just one more question. As you're working with Tom on this concerto, and it's now kind of reached its final form, at least for now, you know, the world premiere. When you were working with the Busoni concerto, especially having that long a history of engaging with Busoni the person, did you ever find yourself wondering, if I could just talk to him, I would ask this question: is there anything you would ask Busoni about that concerto as you worked on it?
Well, I don't know in particular, but of course it's some kind of abstract but very intense wish that were it possible, I would love to have studied with Bosonia or have heard him live and been around that circle, because I find that this was really a unique and fascinating time in history, and in many ways partly because of him. And so kind of I long for the period, and I long to know or to have known him as a figure. And in some way, and I think that's what's beautiful about what we do as performers, that in some way you do get to know the person and the composer and the pianist, because the hands, it enters through your hands and through your minds, but in some way the composer takes over, or at least partially infuses his personality into the performer's personality, because you're literally moving your hands and producing sound in accordance to somebody else's thoughts. And when that crosses over 100 years or 200 years, it's fairly magical and also very touching as a how these things persist in time, even beyond our sort of biological scopes.
That is so beautifully put. Kirill Gerstein, thanks a lot for your time today. I really appreciate it. Wonderful to talk with you.
As always, pleasure.